Welcome to the Owen Podcast, Outwear's podcast all about the mobile industry. And we have a very, very special treat to get today. We have another in a great lineup of guests that have come into our show.
It's good to be here.
That's right. But before I introduce our esteemed guest, let me first introduce Captain Cutsin, Peter Talabot.
Welcome.
Hello. I think I'm going to call you Captain Cutsin now.
Please do. It's a good title.
I like it. It's really nice to have you back. I did a show by myself with three new guys last week.
And I bet nobody interrupted you.
No one cut in. I make fun of you for it, and I love it when you cut in. Keep doing it. But not now. Our second guest that I'm introducing is Mr. Danny Gorog, co-founder and director at Outwear. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy Monday.
We're all very happy on Monday. My name is Keith Smythe. I'm the Android development team lead here. And I have the honor in welcoming our special guest, Mr. Alessio Bresciani, Senior Digital Strategist and Channel Manager at Coles. Welcome.
Thanks, Keith. Good to be here.
Thank you. I hope I didn't murder your last name.
No, that was very good.
Really? Oh, good.
One more time.
Okay, I'm out. Nope. Alessio. So I'm trying to give the Owen podcast a really kind of hard knuckle, straight to the difficult kind of question sort of, you know, feel. Yeah. So what sort of phone do you have?
I've just recently upgraded to the new HTC One.
That's
have a lot
Android?
Of conversations with Danny about
we should
the
talk,
cover.
We should get that on record, actually. We've got. Why don't we just get straight into that? A particular thing against the HTC One. A couple of people here have got them.
It's just too good. It makes the iPhone look really bad.
It's got a round back. It's kind of got a curved back. And the case, when you open the case, doesn't kind of neatly fold beneath the back.
It doesn't.
What do you think of that?
Well, I quite like it because you get to walk with the phone and hold the case. But you know, I empathise that for others, aesthetically, it's perhaps not as pleasing as some other cases.
Do you like it as a phone?
I like it as a phone.
Why?
Bigger screen, great tunes, so the audio quality is really good and super fast compared to my old HTC One.
Okay. Are you an HTC kind of guy?
I am for the moment, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
My first Android phone was a HTC Magic. It was the one with the little trackball inside it. It was fantastic.
It was called the Dream, wasn't it?
Dream, yeah, Dream or Magic. Yeah, I think it had two names. But yeah it was neither of these things. It was very slow.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I'm an iPhone guy, but it seems like some Android users are kind of tied to brands. Like, you know, you're an HTC guy or a Samsung guy. Mm. And some just kind of love Android.
Yeah.
What do you think the kind of the population, the mainstream population is? Do you think they're brand guys or they're Android guys?
I think they're brand. Yeah. I think they're going for either Samsung or HTC. Or for me, it's Nexus. I was HTC until they didn't release an update and I didn't get my ice cream sandwich. And then I, like a small child, I threw a little fit and just bought a Nexus phone.
I've never seen any brand loyalty with my Android friends. Mm. They all just sort of get the new hotness.
Am I not one of your Android friends, Peter?
Well,
it's a hard-hitting question.
Let's ask our guest.
I think people are probably a bit fickle when it comes to Android. So when you have to upgrade your phone, you have a look around. So I was quite attracted to the HTC marketing on this, where they said, ask the internet, and you look up and the reviews are fantastic for the phone. So
yeah. Where do you go to look up? Just sort of Google
Just Google and everything else, yeah. Yeah. But having said that, I've got both phones because I've got an iPhone as well, so...
And your personal SIM card's in your HTC.
That's right.
Okay. Yep.
So the iPhone is the work phone.
I'm kind of excited. I'm an iPhone user. I'm excited that there may be a bigger iPhone coming. What is the limit to the size of a phone you would put in your pocket? Like how big? Is it 5 inch? Is it 5 inch?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit bigger than the last one. But I'd probably go if the iPhone 6 came out and was a larger screen. I would have considered that. It was just 2 months away from when I had
Changing
get a new mind. Phone, exactly.
Okay. I tried the Galaxy Note the other day.
Yeah,
that's huge. That's a big one.
Yeah.
And it sort of, that's probably as big as I'd go.
Could you read, I often think about it, could you read comfortably on a Galaxy Note?
If you can read comfortably on a tablet.
Yeah.
It pretty much is a tablet.
Yeah.
It's too big for me, as far as a phone goes.
Read as in what, like an e-book?
Yeah, as an e-book, because that's the kind of use case. Yeah. You kind of merge them into one. Okay. Anyway, whatever.
I think it's that classic debate over form and function, isn't it? So you get additional function the larger screen you go, but you might have to sacrifice a bit of the form in terms of how you carry it. Or
I'm going to go off note at the moment.
Oh my god!
Because you just said you looked it up on the internet.
Yeah.
What's your kind of go-to site like if you know if The Verge says one thing, if The Verge says buy an HTC M8 and Engadget says buy the Samsung Galaxy S5, what do you?
I cast the net pretty wide. Right. So as a strategy person, I'd almost treat every decision as a different question to look at.
Right.
I wouldn't have any go-to sites. I'd cast the net really wide, get some opinions, then come back and make the decision on that. Okay. That seems to be how I do.
How you're wrong.
Maybe Danny, you've got a special preference.
No, I don't know. I've been checking out the Wire Cutter. Have you heard of the Wire Cutter?
The Wire Cutter, no.
It's by this ex... I think he was an ex... Gizmodo guy called Brian Lamb, and he built this website, and it sort of answers the question, if you know, if I had to buy this product, what's the best one in the category? So like if you have to buy a phone, it'll give you the best phone. If you have to buy an electric razor, it'll give you the best electric razor. And sort of it shortcuts all the, oh god, I've got to research, you know, hundreds of different pages. And it's pretty cool. Let's get
that's really neat.
Top,
we're all looking at the Wire Cutter website now. We'll be right
it's
back.
Really good. Great for cameras, because cameras are, you know, there's a lot of complexity in choosing a camera.
Have you ever trawled through DP review trying to find...
Yeah, that's which, hell.
It's hell. So full on.
I just asked Peter Talbot.
Which camera
tells me, Peter, what camera I buy?
I found, like researching when I bought an SLR, it was just such a nightmare because there's a whole community of people out there that don't take photos and just compare specs on lenses and stuff like that.
I really need to buy a new camera. I just can't be bothered doing the research.
Yeah.
Make Peter do it.
First of all, the question is what format. When I first bought my SLR, there was only, you know, if you wanted a good quality camera, you buy an digital SLR. Now there's the micro 3/4 or 3/3, and there's the mini SLRs, and then there's stick with the iPhone. It's too confusing.
You need a strategist to help you.
Given up. You do need a strategist. How would you go approaching buying a camera, Alessia?
Well, I think what people often do as well is they take multiple bites at the options and the questions. So it's very often that you'll start with quite a complex product, begin researching, have a look, see all the options, become overwhelmed, stop. And then you'll come back and do the same thing. And we all do that perhaps 4 or 5 times before we make a decision these days. So it's very interesting the way that comparison sites and everything else has changed the way that we make a decision.
But especially on the cameras where there's kind of you've got to choose a camp. It's not like, and it's a kind of feels like a bigger decision. Maybe it's just for me, a bigger decision than buying a phone, which I know is only going to last me a couple of years, and I know I'm just going to, you know, roll over.
It is a big decision because you're locked into that lens ecosystem, and they're not cheap things.
Yes.
You know, they're like upwards of $1,000. Like they start at $1,000 for a good lens. so yeah, once you buy into that, you're not gonna, you know, switch it up anytime soon. And you want to, it's sort of like one of those lifetime purchases. You want to go, well, if I collect these lenses, then I can hand them down to my kids and they can just update the body of the camera and stuff like that. There's that whole idea of, that longevity of photography.
We've stumbled upon Pete's favorite topic. you're lighting up. It's amazing.
I'll stop now.
So I'm going to drag this back on track. You mentioned before you were a strategist, Mr. Alessio, and I'm looking at your title, Senior Digital Strategist and Channel Manager. What does that do?
So I guess my previous roles are all strategy or channel management. What I'm actually doing at Coles tends to be focused on channel management. And it's a recently new, I think, role for a lot of businesses, especially those ones that are building up digital in their business. So a channel manager's got several functions. One, they're responsible for maintaining the channel in terms of the digital assets. Number two, they're responsible for growing the channel in accordance with what customers might want to see. So if, you know, let's take Coles, for example. If financial services wants to build a mobile app, the channel manager's role is to figure out what are the functions in that app, how does it best respond to customer needs, and then how will it grow the business over time. And the other function is to just manage those assets over time, grow them and grow the user base that leverages them.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of Coles, a channel would be like financial services is a channel?
That's right. So a channel might be digital channels, could be the websites that we have, the mobile apps that we build, could be anything in that sense. Mm-hmm. What I've found with channel management, though, is it's quite an evolving space and every business is a bit different.
All right.
Like what a business defines as a channel.
Yeah, that's right. So okay. So Coles might view stores as a channel, for example. I work in the financial services business, and the way that we're structuring that is digital is its own channel, but that comes with its own set of definitions for a retailer. So we have to always look at those things.
It's nice and simple, really. Okay, so you mentioned the Coles mobile app in that as one of the things that the channel is kind of growing.
Yeah.
So what's the Coles mobile wallet app?
Yeah, so this is a mobile app that we launched in association with Outwear in July, and really responds to a customer challenge that we had, which is we've got a lot of people who use credit cards today, and they wanted to access the transactional details for their credit cards on the go. They didn't really have a way to do that, so we went about launching the Coles mobile wallet, which I'd be happy to tell you a bit more about.
Yeah, I mean, we know a lot about it, but
it feels weird asking what it is. I worked on it.
Yeah, so it's a very exciting initiative, I think, for the business, for financial services. What it does is it puts your Flybuys card and your credit card on your phone, so you can access all of your previous transactions on your phone. You can view your available credit and your available balance. You can see how many Flybuys points you have earned recently, as well as activate Flybuys offers. And we've also got the added kind of function of the Coles Pay Tag, which is the sticker that you add to the back of the phone, and you can actually pay just by holding it up to one of the payment terminals in store.
Now, yeah. I was just flashing mine around because I've actually got one on my phone. I've got to say, I love it. I got it a couple of weeks ago, and I sort of thought when I put it on my phone, so this is it's like a little credit card for those who haven't seen it. It's a little credit card you put on the back of your phone, and it sort of acts as a Flybuys card when you're in Coles, but it also is like a Paywave MasterCard.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, it feels a bit weird in my pocket, you know, just like it makes it all feel a bit different. But I've started to use it now, and it's so convenient. So I now just leave my wallet. Like when I'm going to grab a coffee, I just leave my wallet on my desk, take my phone, tap it, and there's such a sense of satisfaction. And I've been showing people, and it's like you go to the app and you load the app, and it's like instantly the transaction is there.
That's
really
awesome.
It's really cool.
I always wondered if it was actually going to do that in production.
No, it really
I only
works.
Saw it.
It really works. Whoever built this thing is just amazing.
Oh, just amazing. Actually, I didn't work on the iOS one.
It's really cool. So how does Coles come up with work out that it needs to build a product like this?
Mm.
So and how do you define it?
Yeah, so it was a very collaborative exercise, the whole mobile wallet. So the very first thing we did was recognize whether there was a customer need for something like this. We felt there was, because all the traffic and everything else across our websites was growing a significant amount in terms of mobile. So the very first thing we did was got people in a room, started putting post-it notes on the walls to say, if we were to build something, what do we think would be really valuable to customers? And from there, we started to prioritize what would be in, what would be out, what would be a first horizon initiative, what would be a second horizon initiative. And that was the very first step.
And how long does it take to get from that? Well, who's in the room at that point? Who's making those decisions?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we just brought everyone in from the business into the room. So
the financial services business.
Yeah, that's right. So it wasn't necessarily all teams, but it was representatives from different teams, a lot of the kind of senior folk in the business. So we really wanted to commence the project in a collaborative spirit. And the other thing that we made sure was there was just taking into account what customers would perceive as valuable.
Do you have customers in that workshop, or do you take the output of that workshop and then put it in front of customers and test it?
Yeah, so we took inputs from customers into that workshop. So we looked at a number of things like what were the pain points from customers, what had they written about us, what had people said when they called into our call centres, for example. And they were some of the inputs. And then from the outputs of the workshop, we tested those with actual customers. Coles has got a long-term heritage of testing ideas with customers. I think back into the 1950s, they had kind of testing labs where we would trial recipes and things like that. You know, in terms of what was going into cafeterias, we would trial a lot of the grocery lines before they went out as well. So we wanted to maintain that spirit in this project.
And how closely did you're talking about building an MVP, a minimum viable product. How closely did your first cut of that MVP align with what customers actually wanted? Was it close?
It's probably about 50-70%. The rest of it was space that we had to create during the project to allow those other real differentiators. And that's probably something worth touching on at some stage.
So can you tell us what you came up with in that sticky note session that didn't make the cut, that wasn't interesting for customers?
Yeah. It was probably, that's a good question actually, Danny. I'd say all of that was in, but the way that it was represented was very different. And then there were other things not in that we hadn't necessarily conceived that came in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask a question.
Okay. I saw you open your mouth. I'm like,
yeah. So there's a once you run that session, how long does it take before you're actually building the app between that kind of inception point where you go, we're going to get a heap of stakeholders in the room, we're going to do some proof, MVP analysis.
Yep.
How long till you actually? You go out to tender, you find someone who can help you build it, and then you actually start building it. Is it 6 months, 3 months?
For Coles Financial Services, when we did it relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. So we probably did it in 2 to 3 months, I would say. The ideas that ended up in the app were probably going around a long time before that. I've been involved in a number of other businesses where that cycle takes quite a bit longer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was where we started off from. I would say that, and you know, often we hear about people saying that 80% of the value comes from that thinking that's done up front. In most of the projects like this, which are going to set up something that's foundational and really important, we do encourage to do it quite deeply, which I think we did in this project.
Did you find that you know, working in the Coles financial team, because it's kind of like the new kid on the block, and it's, you know, smaller than the other guys, and yeah, it's a little bit more dynamic. Was it easier to, you know, make those timelines more aggressive and do what you wanted rather than going through the bureaucracy of, say, the larger, larger banks and institutions?
So one thing I've noticed about Coles Financial Services, it's very entrepreneurial. So it's a couple of things that come with that. A real spirit to drive change and do things differently for customers and make sure that the value we can deliver actually makes customers better off. And I think that spirit helps accelerate the planning for a particular project. The other thing is it's just smaller. It's smaller than a lot of very large organisations, so it can afford to be a little bit more nimble.
You can pivot when things need changing and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, I think, you know, this was our first mobile app project. So the mobile wallet was the very first thing we put into market that was around Android and iOS for Coles Financial Services, not necessarily the rest of the Coles business.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at that, you've got a bit of a luxury because it's not out there in the market. You don't have to change it. So you're literally creating something from scratch. And we worked kind of quite diligently to do well on that part of the initiative.
Do you feel like you've set the bar a bit for the rest of Coles? Just be like, look what we put out, guys. You know, just
yeah, I think it's really interesting because I'm not sure that the Coles business that in the last 5 years has seen enormous change, and we're going to see a lot more change in the next 5 years. But things like best customer experience and kind of boldly set up new channels is actually some of the principles of the entire business. So whilst we've done a great job with a mobile wallet in this instance, I think what that does is it shows all the directions that Coles could take mm-hmm. for mobile apps. And we've already got a lot of other great examples in the market. I think we kind of all spurn each other on. It's fantastic like that as a business.
When you think about building an app, and I know there's heaps of options, why did you choose to go down the native route?
Well, when we look at things like best customer experience, and I'd be really interested in your view here as well, because I know we've had a lot of discussions about it. But if we wanted to aim for a really good rating and have fantastic feedback from customers and have a really quick experience, we felt that native was really the only way to go to take advantage of the platforms that are available today. The other thing we wanted to do was make it really easy to log in, so we've got the 4-digit PIN or 4-digit access code in order to get into the app, and that was something that we've really only seen in native platforms.
Yeah. What are your? I mean, you've been involved with mobile before. What are the things that you know you think about when you're building a mobile app? What are your? I don't know. Like the, you know, do you look at other apps on the market and go, I really like this element, or do you like this, you know, this gesture, or like what are the things that kind of your top three or four things that you worry about?
Yeah, we definitely do those things, and often in a different sequence. So we'd look at, well, what's the customer need that we have to service here? Then how would actually customers be using their device? So for Coles, are they in-store and they walking down the aisles and they think, oh, it would be fantastic to activate a Flybuys offer so that I know which product to take from the shelves and then check out with? So those kind of things of the overall customer behaviour and how they might be using the app are really important. But market scans and intelligent scannings are also really important. So we did a lot of that in this project, look at what was best internationally from supermarkets and non-supermarkets, from financial service providers and not, and then think about how we can infuse some of that thinking in the app. And the other part, of course, is working with a great collaborator. So the work we did with your team to have a look at how we could differentiate that experience. And I know we went through a lot of iterations. That's all really important, those small incremental changes we can make to lift the app experience.
Let's zoom up a little bit and let's talk about the payment space in particular. We've got this is, I'd call this kind of a hybrid solution. We've got a physical pay tag that we've stuck to the phone,
yeah,
which works in tandem with an app.
Yeah.
In 1 year, in 2 years, in 3 years, what do Coles, how do you see the space? Do you see customers paying with physical cards? Do you see them paying with mobile phones that have got built-in NFC or Bluetooth?
Or your watch?
Yeah, your watch. I mean, how do you think about that space and moving forward?
I think it's definitely very interesting to think about, and there are a lot of unknowns there. But what we do know is the space is going to change dramatically in the next few years. We might not necessarily know what the technology will be, but we know it's going to change. And because of that, it's very interesting to watch, not just for Coles, but for many players in this space. A few things that we've looked at in planning this specific project was that contactless has just become enormous across the retail space. So people using their card to just tap and make their payment for under $100 has become enormous. And we're seeing a growing proportion of the transactions made in that way.
So under $100 means you don't have to use a PIN.
That's right.
So is what people love about it the fact they don't need to use a PIN, or it's just kind of the gesture of tapping? Because I kind of always think about it when I'm doing it, like, is it just fun to do?
Yeah.
Or is it fun to do because I don't have to put my PIN in? Because it's a faster transaction.
It's faster. Yeah, you just...
Is that what it is? Is it speed? I'm sure Coles is talking to customers about this.
I think everyone's cash, different.
You know, yeah. I think that's why it's taken off so quickly. It's just ramped up. Like, it's insane, like, the adoption of it.
Have you any stats on how many people pay with contactless?
It's a large portion. I wouldn't have the stat top of mind, but yeah, it's a large portion growing very quickly.
I've heard that we're the world's most popular contactless market. Well, Australia has the highest number of contactless transactions in the world.
It could well be the case. So there are a couple of things that are really interesting in Australia. One is that we've got over 300,000 contactless terminals in our country, which is really significant.
Right.
And then the other one is that in terms of cards and their prevalence out there that have got contactless, there are a lot. And thirdly, people are actually using them. So all of those things seem to make Australia a very interesting market when it comes to contactless.
So how do we get to that point? How did Australia become the contactless capital of the world? Like, it's a bit of chicken and the egg. Like, I guess banks just started putting out, or, you know, Coles started putting out contactless cards.
Yep.
And then the retailers just responded by, you know, upgrading their hardware to support the contactless payments. Is that right?
I think that would be how it came about, yeah. And that's a very dynamic market in Australia. You know, we've got industries that support this kind of work and this evolution, which is fantastic. It allows companies like Coles to play in the space.
It's interesting to think about the psychology, though, of when you're actually making a payment. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm making a payment with my, you know, my pay tag or, you know, contactless, it feels less...
You're more.
It just feels less expensive.
Not really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just playing a game.
Definitely under $100. So, you know, I just tap and it's... Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And what I do, which is really stupid as well, I always get the receipt. I don't know why.
What do you do with the receipt?
Just throw it out.
Yeah.
I get
but
a
I'm
receipt.
Just like, I better check that, get a piece of paper. That makes it just makes it feel like more of a transaction. But I'm trying to wean myself off that.
As a consumer, do you agree with that? That contactless feels... less serious?
I think it still feels pretty serious.
Yeah?
I think for when you look at things like integration of that with something like a mobile app, it can become quite serious because you're seeing the payment and then in the transactions real time, you're seeing the impact as well. And I think that's a fantastic service to give to customers. The other thing that I'll mention just with things like the Coles Pay tag is that because the space is moving still so quickly, it was important that we didn't lock into anything at the same time. So the mobile wallet works if you've got the pay tag, but it also works if you don't. And we had to also service that customer need that there'd be some people who still don't want a Coles Pay tag. So how do you service that need and still make it attractive for them as well?
What happens, I've wanted to ask this of you for a while, what happens when I get a new phone and I need a new pay tag? Because this is pretty well stuck on. I've been trying to kind of...
You take the back off your old phone.
Is it really stuck on?
It's pretty... I haven't used a screwdriver, but I think that's the only way I can get it off. Is the idea that I just get a call up and get a new one?
You could get a new one or, for example, my new phone has got the pay tag that was on the previous phone.
How did you get it off?
I just took it off.
Okay.
Used a bit of leverage.
Okay, all right.
But
I can just glue this phone onto my iPhone 6. That's a good
but
way
of,
to get
but
it.
Of course, the other option is you can call up and get a new pay tag issued as well.
That see, if you've got the HTC with a rounded back, it actually doesn't stick perfectly on there. You can actually get something under there.
That's actually a good point because I imagine you're going to see like a – probably worth thinking about that, how you deal with it. The call center deals with the volume of people when, you know, the iPhone 6 comes out and there is that issue. People are like they're addicted to having their pay tag stuck to their phone.
Yeah.
You need new ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they stick it on their cover and then they change their cover. Yeah. Things like that.
Yeah, okay.
We'll have to deal with those things as they come.
Interesting problems to deal with.
Yeah. Danny, are you getting weird looks when you're using your phone to pay for things?
Are people thinking
you're trying to rip them off?
They're pretty kind of, they just sort of, they, I go, yeah,
they just get
it. And they go, okay. It just works.
It's cool. I was at Coles the other day and they had the ads up for the app. And I was like, I just wanted to tell everybody there. I was like, I worked on that. I don't think they really want to hear that from me at all. No. They're like, just buy your milk. And it's very nice
Please
to meet you.
Please leave. You're ruining my stand.
And a question I'll ask you, Danny, do you also use the Flybuys barcode on the back?
I don't use that because I'm still having some issues sorting out the Flybys link to the phone, to the number. I've leveraged my wife's account and I think I accidentally signed up for another Flybys account. So working through that.
I think you can link multiple Flybys accounts.
I think you can.
Because I think all my Flybys points goes to my wife. So I get a report saying, you've been doing flying and you've been purchasing things and your Flybys balance is zero because it's all in another account somewhere.
Right. She's siphoned off your points.
Exactly. And every now and then she'll say, we have movie tickets or we can go to the aquarium or something.
So let's switch gears and talk about payments. What excites you in mobile? It's a broad question.
Yeah, in terms of what we've done or what we're
doing? In terms of just the technology. I mean, are you excited about wearables? Are you excited about payment technology? Are you excited about, I don't know.
Yeah, I think generally myself and many people around our business are just excited by the potential that mobile can offer. Mm. At this stage, because we're obviously in launch mode for something that we put to market, we're really excited by the experience and what that means to customers. Mm-hmm. So seeing customers interact with that, open it up, find it simple, and really see that it serves something that they're doing day to day, as well as kind of going into store and using that. That's really exciting for us at the moment. But in terms of what comes next, top of mind would be wearables, would be payments, be the growing interconnectivity between the mobile and the home. I think that's going to be a really interesting space.
Mm. The internet, is that sort of Internet of Things?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of home automation things set up at the moment or things you're sort of tinkering?
Not myself, but in a previous role, I was kind of in the health space, pharmaceutical space. And one of the things, and this was quite a number of years ago, probably going back about 8 years ago, and one of the activities we did was to cast out what the future could be like. And we looked at a number of things that we really viewed as quite implausible at that stage. And it's amazing to see that many of those things are just on the horizon at the moment. So I think the next 10 years, 10 to 15 years is going to be incredibly exciting.
just watch Star Trek and then it's all going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Food replicators and...
Yeah, well, that, I mean, that kind of lends us on to another discussion, I think, about how a lot of the science fiction that's been created in the last century has driven the innovation and entrepreneurship that we're seeing today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I saw an early iPad on Star Trek in back in the 80s, I think, the 70s or 80s. they were walking around with these screens that just looked like iPads. And
it's interesting to think that's a fun... It's a sort of an interesting notion, you know, to think that all the technology we've created today was based on, like, these kind of creative dudes kind of throwing stuff against the wall.
Geeks and, just dreaming. And
making made-up stuff, and we've grown up with it as kids, and we go, oh, that'd be cool to actually make that.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
I don't want to carry my wallet around. I just want to pay for it with my phone. Now.
So how long do you think it's going to be before most people you know don't have a wallet?
I've been really surprised by the growing preparedness of most people to start switching towards their phone for payments.
But we're not recording this, but pick a number. Like what number? What year?
Wait, we're not?
What year? I mean, I sat around a table in about 2007 and I said to myself, how long before most of my friends... have an iPhone because it was an Android at that stage. How long before they get rid of their BlackBerry? And it took about, I don't know, 6-7 years. Now, I go out for dinner with my friends. No one has a BlackBerry anymore. Everyone's got an iPhone or an Android phone. So, is it 5 years? Is it 2 years? Is it 10 years?
I'll say two. I think what we'll see next is we'll see a lot of co-use of both things. So, with mobiles, a lot more people will be paying for mobiles, but they'll still have their wallet as a backup. Mm-hmm. In terms of the year proper where people actually discard their wallets, I think that's a while off yet. But I think in the next 2 years, we'll see a lot more around the use of mobiles for payments, definitely.
I blame the driver's license. It's just the one thing that you have to...
Carry around.
I have to carry.
Also, photo Peter J.
Talbot. I blame Costco.
But how long until this is... actually, I read something today. Over 50% of the applications to the UK driving to apply for a driver's license now in the UK come via mobile. So how long until the government is thinking about doing ID cards like this as passbook files or as some sort of digital file? Must be on the cards.
Well, they're already ramping up. I recently signed up to all the MyGov stuff. It must be an initiative. And you can hook up your Medicare and whatever
Centrelink
else.
And everything. Yeah,
all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I've tried that.
My disability. all the government stuff. And so it's kind of interesting and it's nice to have that. And I think you can... get your health records on there as well, which is kind of creepy and interesting.
This year I paid my rego, and it's the first year you don't actually need a sticker on the car.
Mm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Victoria's caught up. I came from Western Australia before this job, and I didn't have a sticker on the car. And I came in and re-registered the car in Victoria because that's the right thing to do. Mm. And that's the first thing I noticed was, I thought, oh, no, we're going to have to put a sticker on the car, but they've just turned it off. So
how am I going to be able to tell the vintage of nice cars that I see out there?
You'll be an app for it, I'm sure.
Like, oh,
so out of curiosity, do you feel that that's... a good thing, or do you feel you still want the sticker?
No, totally a great thing. I mean, the less paper and the less cards that one carries, the better for one's soul, I believe. What about, health's an interesting one though, isn't it? Would you be comfortable storing all of your health records on your mobile phone?
I probably wouldn't.
No?
No.
What about some of your health records? Like just enough so you could go to a new doctor and they could...
Well, I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, I'd be keen to hear your views as well. But things like if you're carrying your phone around, it's got your heartbeat, it's got all of the exercise you've done in the week and it's helping you improve overall, I think that'd be fantastic. But health records, I think that's still kind of a bit of a sensitive area for most people. So,
is it because people don't want to get caught out with life insurance and stuff like that? It's like, oh, you've had like a really bad diet for the last 30 years and we've got all the proof here because it's in your phone. Is that why people, you know, is that the issue? Why is it such a hot topic?
Yeah, that's right. Why are people so sensitive about their privacy when it comes to health when, people sign away their lives for credit cards and they give banks and financial institutions all their financial history.
I guess health
and
is...
what is it about the health that you're concerned?
I guess it's like the most personal of personal information you have. I mean, you don't go up to someone and be like, I've got cancer.
You don't go up to someone and say, how much money have you got in the bank either? People are happy to carry all that information around on their phone. So what is it about health that is...
I don't know, it just feels more personal. I mean, banks and finance and things like numbers and money and, yeah, I guess you earn money and things like that.
Your relationship with your bank manager, if anybody has that anymore, but your relationship with your
bank manager
and your doctor is quite different.
Yeah.
I think Australia's probably got some different views on that as well, just in terms of the population, because I know e-health has generally taken off elsewhere in the world. But from some of the studies I've seen, it seems that Australians are a little bit more sensitive about that.
I think it'll be interesting. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think, health book, I think, is going to be a big deal, which is coming out in iOS 8, sort of the central point to... And I think you need a Google or an Apple to kind of drive the state of the art in that forward, because it's definitely not going to come out of a government, because governments have got no idea about, user interface or systems generally. And it'll be interesting to see what sort of data people are happy to, feed into that system. And when they start to see some benefit, like you're walking along and suddenly your phone vibrates and says, hey, I think you're having a heart attack. I've noticed your pulse is not right.
Yeah, and I think you're right. These things can change very quickly. Like, I remember when all phones got GPS and people were saying, what are we going to do? The GPS will be on us and someone will be able to know where I am. But all of us are using those services today. And the ability for technology to influence the decisions where we trade off for convenience is very interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Probably what we're going to say.
Yeah.
I just talking about the health issue, I for one would love to just have like the ability to just walk into any GP and go, and they know me intimately and be like, oh, okay, we have all your records, we've got all your vitals, everything.
We know it's mental.
Yeah.
Hypochondriac.
You're a wreck. Yeah. I just like the convenience of that would outweigh any sort of privacy.
So would I.
But that's me.
So would I.
I once told someone I was ready to have Google insert a chip into my
data. Think about the data you could get if you collected that stuff anonymously and everyone kind of put it into a system. Think about the unbelievable data you could do from some sort of big data mining around anything. You know, like, we know that a population who are 38 and have, orange hair and are very funny, they suffer from, they become alcoholic.
Daddy thinks you're 38.
That is a half-truth, Danny.
Pete's a few months older
than
me.
I think that's the real potential of this stuff, like, collecting the data and doing something with it.
Well, if you can get fine-grain data when it comes to, it's like, oh, okay, well, people that live here, they're eating this food, there's way less cases of heart disease or cancer or whatever. That's the power of big data in quotation marks.
Coles would have a lot of stuff on big data. I'm sure there's a lot of, Flybys is a very interesting program. I don't know if you can talk to it a bit, but the sort of very powerful data around what people are buying and how often they're buying and when they're buying, and very powerful stuff.
Yeah, I think, there is definitely some interesting things happening, probably a bit outside of my area.
Okay. Leave that alone. Yeah. Let's talk about apps. So one of the questions we had for you was, it's not that recent anymore, but there's been WWDC and there's Google I.O. and wanted to get your thoughts on the announcements that happened there and what are some of the things you're excited to see in the new versions of the operating systems?
Yes, I think HomeKit and HealthKit are really interesting. So we're only scratching the surface of what potentially we could do there. I wonder if we're going to see some big things later on this year. Perhaps you guys are a bit closer to that, but that automation of what happens at home and what we could do using our phone to track our health and our activity, I think, it's going to be one to watch. So I'm pretty excited about that. iOS 8, I'm still unsure the impact, but I'm sure it's going to grow very quickly. So be things to watch.
What would your strategy be if, say in September, new iPhones announced, has NFC? Is your team in a position where they could sort of take that information and go, okay, let's, how do we work this in to the next version of the app, or is this where we're going to, would you even go down that route? Would you stick to like how it is right now, or what's your take on that whole technology?
We'd definitely have to consider it. So we're, I think, one of the first to do an NFC pilot last year, early 2013, on about 60 phones. So we actively took on board the learnings from that when we did the Coles mobile wallet. And one of the reasons we chose Paytag for the moment was because it was really the only thing that's agnostic of all the platforms. Yeah. But if that tips and we see far more platforms having that kind of technology, then it would be something we'd definitely look at. The other thing, though, is testing can be quite difficult. If you've got lots of phones out there with NFC, it's pretty hard to test for them. Whereas if you've got a standard thing like the Coles Paytag, it's a bit simpler. Yeah,
it is a very robust solution, on a practical level. Yeah. Just whacking it on the back, it works.
Mm. Yeah, we have seen just on Google Play a lot of comments around NFC, and there's obviously really strong appetite from Android users to start using that. So prompted us to put a comment back on the website about that.
I'm always reminded of the, have you heard about the story where the Americans were flying to space and they challenged their engineering team to come up with a pen that would let them write upside down and stuff, and they spent millions of dollars developing this cool pen, pressurized.
It was on Seinfeld, that pen.
Was it? Yeah, it was on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And the Russians...
Would you take the pen?
The Russians just took the pencil. So that's kind of the Paytag's just a solution that just works really easily. Across the board.
I was convinced that NFC was going to be in the iPhone 4S.
Yeah, well, you're still waiting. Really,
but it's classic Apple to just wait and wait and wait until it is just so ready and just so mature that it's like, okay, now we'll do this.
I'm at the point where I'm kind of deflating my expectations about what this iWatch is going to have. Like, I've got no idea about it, but I'm just like, in my head, it's this, unbelievably thin, unbelievably light. It's like basically an iPhone on my wrist. And now, last night I was thinking, I'm probably just going to be like an up band that, measures my pulse and that's it. And people will be like, that's crazy. How can that cost $200? And we'll be like, the next version's going to have a screen and it's going to be cool.
iPod shuffle of wearables.
Yeah, that's right. The iPod shuffle.
I think it will.
Did you ever have an iPod shuffle?
I've never had one, though.
Did you ever have one?
No, I didn't.
The white iPod shuffle.
I had an iRiver.
Around the neck. Do you remember that?
I had an iRiver that was like a necklace.
Oh, iRivers, that's right.
I looked like a Korean schoolgirl.
If there were a watch release, do you think that will replace the dress watch? Because it's something that the phones didn't really have. They didn't have to replace anything. They were completely new.
I think it will, completely. And I read something on that, and people were like, when they, people had fob watches and pocket watches, they're like, there's no way this wristwatch is going to take over the pocket watch. And now, how many people do you know who wear pocket watches? So I think absolutely that's the big area. And that people spend, it's $1 billion in industry that's about to get
turned on its head.
Yeah, I think so.
there are rumors that Apple are going to come out with like a $2,000 version of the iWatch. Or
you're joking, really?
Well, these are crazy rumors.
Crazy reactions.
Do you think that's my reaction?
No.
$2,000.
That they would have like an entry level at say $200, $299.
I think Apple will be above the other prices. And then, I think they'll release one thing and they'll go, this is our offering.
You don't think Apple will do like a Virtu style?
No, I don't know. What's the LG? You've got the LG?
I borrowed the LG G.
So Keith is our resident expert on Android Wear.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of guys here that know more than me.
You've given it back.
They had to tackle me and basically prod me with electric probes.
So why wouldn't you buy your own one?
I feel the battery's not quite there for the price tag for me at this point. The LG G is a very good kind of minimum viable product for a wearable watch. It's black. It's got no design to it at all. It's just black. It's got a very simple band to it, and it's Android Wear, pure and simple. I'm waiting for when a new version of Windows would come out and everyone in the business world would wait for Service Pack 1. So I'm waiting for Service Pack 1. I'm waiting for the next round of watches to come out and for them to improve on the design a bit.
It's almost like an original iPod right now.
Yeah.
Those ugly buttons.
Yeah. I have tiny wrists.
Do you have a Pebble or would you consider wearing a watch that, I don't know, is digital and has Bluetooth? And
potentially, but I'm not sure.
What if you could use it in your mobile wallet?
Score watch.
Where would you consider it?
Consider it to try it.
I wear a Pebble. I have the Bluetooth turned off because I'm just paranoid about, radiation.
Yeah, it's something that'll show up in your health report.
Pretty stupid. But they're hugely useful. I mean, we did a version of AFL Live for Pebble, and it's great. And I love when I've actually got it on. Sometimes I just forget that it's turned on. And I just love that I can look at my wrist and get a notification. And I love how clear the display is. Like, and I love that I can change the watch face and stuff. And the battery, I think the battery lasts longer.
Yeah, so Pebble battery is much nicer.
I think for me, it's a, you know, like, it's going to come and it's going to come in a big way. The question I ask myself is, would my wife wear one? She doesn't wear a watch anyway. So I think it's been a lot of kind of benefit for her to put one on her wrist.
Yeah. The first thing my wife said when she saw the LG G was like, that is huge.
Yeah. It's going to be a few years. And I think like flexible displays and, you know, more elegant designs and stuff like
that. Yeah. I was also petrified of dropping it. Not only because it wasn't mine, but it's because if I dropped it, like,
just putting our predictor hats on while we're at it. I watch rectangular, square,
circle,
or circle. This is very play school inspired.
Ask our guest.
Star.
I think rectangular or square for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Danny?
Don't know. Don't even know if it's going to have a watch face.
I don't even think it's going to be released. Is it?
Maybe. Is it official? Maybe it's not even going to be released. That's the thing.
They'll probably, be like, one more thing. We're not going to do it.
Yeah. It's a new iPhone.
It has different screen sizes.
But that LG, the Motorola, what's it called?
The Motorola 360.
Yep. Is that out yet?
No.
Not yet, but it's rumored to be out very, very soon.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of rumors just starting to crop up now.
Okay.
On all my RSS feeds.
So that looks like the watch to buy.
It looks very pretty. Looks
really cool.
There is one thing about it that ticks me
it's
off.
It's made by Motorola.
No. it's called the 360, but in order to get that round face, I'm going to start geeking out now. They had to, according to Android, it's a rectangular screen. And to get the round face, they've kind of pushed it up and just put a round kind of skin around it.
Right.
So it's not really round. According to Android, it's not round. It's just rectangular and it's aware that there's a skin cutting off the corners of the screen. So you can still try and put stuff in that corner. You just, no one's going to see it.
Right.
But in order to do that, when they pushed the thing up, they've left this black bar at the bottom of the round screen. And I hate saying this because I'm just going to ruin the watch for everybody if they've got OCD like me. But you have a look at the watch. It's actually more of a Motorola 350.
Right.
Because you lose about 10 degrees just down the bottom there. So, yeah.
Right.
Trick for young players.
See, I don't think that... It just feels to me like all these products that are out at the moment are just kind of compromised. Feels to me like we're at the same point where we were before the iPhone was released. Like, there are all these kind of products that were trying to be stuff, but they actually didn't solve a problem or they didn't deliver properly.
I
think that's why we're waiting on Apple to release something that actually kind of does do that or is.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be as broken as like pre-iPhone when there was like the horrible Windows phones and Blackberries were sort of. They were reigning supreme and like the N95 was big and
you'd mention a Nokia.
What's this been Nokia?
No, love just outstanding. Nokia. No. But yeah, I feel like they're at the stage where it's like that HTC like scroll wheel
with the little thing.
Yeah.
Like it just feels a bit clunky. It's like the first versions of Android.
It's the MVP.
Just really sort of sketchy. But exciting times.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they do something amazing that totally breaks the mold.
Me too.
Because it's just a tough challenge to answer because I'm not sure there is one at the moment. So you look at your watch and you go, oh, actually, this is fantastic. It tells the time. It does everything I need. But, you know, what are they going to build into that to really surprise people?
Customers? There's, you know, I run and I've got a Garmin watch that tracks my heart rate and GPS and time and all that stuff. And if I could do that and if I could have my wallet built into it if it had sort of Bluetooth or NFC. And there's no reason why it couldn't. You know, this is kind of a satellite. The phone is a satellite device to the computer and the watch can be a satellite device to the phone.
Mm.
So there's no reason why there can't be really cool stuff that happens on a watch.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. I had one of those first Garmin watches and it was a brick, but I still put it on my wrist and got on a bike and went out. It was fantastic.
I was going to ask you before you sort of finish up, the latest Apple results came out and they were really good. One of the things that surprised a lot of analysts and I think I was pretty surprised is the tablet growth is kind of stalled.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who works in a big, you know, one of Australia's biggest enterprises, what do you see people sitting around the table in meetings with tablets? Are they pretty popular?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, tablets are well through the organisation.
Do you feel like you can do your work on them?
I think there are definitely ways to make them more user-friendly for work. But as a device to read off and do presentations off, they're fantastic. Mm. Also, I think people are using their mobiles in a bit of a different way as well. They're substituting tablets in a little bit more than we saw a few years ago, which I'm quite intrigued by too.
Substituting tablets just to use for their
phones? Well, I think when you first had your phone, then the tablet came out, people were using the tablet for a lot more than phone. But what I've seen recently is people, or that initial behaviour is still kind of being substituted back to mobile phone. Mm. So people are, and it might be around the operating systems becoming a bit more user-friendly, people are doing a lot more emails on phones. Mm. And maybe that's one of the things driving that tablet adoption. Because there are a lot of tablets around the workplace, definitely.
Less of a gap between phablets and tablets. Mm. Now, like
the large phones and the tablets.
Yeah. Is the Slate popular? Do you ever see that?
I haven't seen too many Slate. Of them around.
Is that what it's called? Surface.
Surface.
I definitely haven't seen the Slate. Because that was released in like Las Vegas by HP and never shipped. Slate.
Was that the Palm one?
Yeah, no, it was HP. We had a Surface here. HP. Have you seen any Surfaces?
I've seen a couple,
tablets?
Yeah, not too many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it all iPads that you see?
Oh, there are a few Android, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'm just saying that we track the time on an Android Nexus 10 here at the Orm Podcast.
They still make that?
They do, actually. It's a really old tablet now, as far as tablets go anyway. Cool. All right. So I think we can wrap it up about there. Yeah. Because I've just checked the Nexus 10 and it's given me accurate time. Isn't that? Look at that.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for coming in. Thank you, Mr. Alessio, for coming in and spending some time.
My pleasure. Great to be here with you guys today. Yeah.
Always welcome back, by the way. So
thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Peter.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Palace Keith.
I love how you say that. Thank you, Danny.
Pleasure.
And thank you, Mr. Andy, for sitting by. Thumbs up. Join us next time, guys.